Should Literature for Young Children Teach Politics? Well, Julia Mickenberg, co-editor of Tales for Little Rebels, a collection of radical children's literature, says that there's a long historical precedent for doing just that. In a new collection she's co-edited, the stories may be told in verse or by animals, but they mirror the concerns of their times. So we have chickens protesting capitalism in 1910 and ostriches fighting fascism in the 1940s. NYU Press publishes this book, and I'm delighted to welcome Julia Mickenberg to the show, along with two of its contributors, Charlotte Pomerantz and Joe Molnar. Welcome to our show.
Thank you.
Julia, what were your criteria for inclusion in a book of radical children's literature? Were there any particular themes that you wanted to address?
Well, we wanted to represent the range of radical movements throughout the 20th century. We focused on the 20th century so that work could still be relevant to today, but we didn't go further back than that because of that. And we wanted to represent, you know, socialism, communism, the New Left, feminism, all this range. As far as criteria beyond being representative historically, we wanted literature that would be still relevant today, that would be amusing, interesting, actually fun for people to read.
And only on the left, you would not have had, because there are right-wing radicals as well.
Sure, yeah. No, I mean, as far as this, you know, we were focusing just on the left in this instance.
Are any of these stories that you've included well-known?
I think some of them are well known. There is only one story that's still in print, and that's Carl Sandburg's Rutabaga Pigeon, or the story that comes from Carl Sandburg's Rutabaga Pigeons. I think Jay Williams' Practical Princess, certainly Dr. Seuss's The Sneetches. We have the original version of that.
You have something by Langston Hughes.
And we have something
Hughes
by
well.
Langston Hughes. A number of the authors are well known. Sid Hoff's Mr. His. Sid Hoff was the author of Danny and the Dinosaur. We've got Norma Klein, William Gropper.
And we have Charlotte Pomerantz and Joe Molnar.
Yeah.
Charlotte, tell us about your story, The Day They Parachuted Cats on Borneo. What inspired it?
Well, it started out as an article in the New York Times, a straightforward news story with a whole chain of events to eradicate malaria through DDT and what that did to the resident population of cats and rats and lizards and caterpillars and who knows what. And so it seemed to me almost like the house that Jack built. I mean, one thing led to another. And obviously there was this great chain of being or chain of not being. And
so this is about environmental degradation.
Right.
And is that a radical
good
position?
Good question.
Well,
sorry, go ahead.
I mean, what struck us as radical was this getting children to think about the way that things are interrelated and the unintended consequences of act, and also just thinking ecologically. And there's also wonderful humor in that piece, which is not necessarily radical, but it makes children want to read it.
What was the reaction to the story when it was first published?
By my kids. They thought it was great. So did my Aunt Josie. However, it got an award from the United Nations for being one of the best books of the year. It got very good reviews.
But parents don't necessarily buy this kind of book for their kids.
Well, yes, they sold a lot of books.
Oh, so
it was a long time ago.
It sounds like it all worked out well.
It worked very well.
Although Borneo still lost all of those animals.
And the interesting thing is when I was researching malaria the other day, I realized that the statistics for death and disease were unchanged since I wrote this book in 1970, whatever. That in 1971, when I wrote the book, there were 1 million died of malaria, and now there are 800,000. So there's really been no progress. And I gather all that's required is netting sprayed with DDT, so that the solution seems to me incredibly simple and cheap, and yet we have the same scourge that we had all those years ago.
Joe, tell us about your book, Elizabeth, the Puerto Rican Child Tells Her Story.
Yeah.
Who's Elizabeth?
I beg your pardon?
Who is Elizabeth in your story?
Well, Elizabeth was a child whom I located living in East Harlem. I was a professional photographer at that time, and I didn't think of these children's books as being particularly political or radical. I was just interested in doing them because I love to take candid photographs of people, including candid photographs of children. So I thought up the idea of doing a series of three children's books, and a Mexican-American child, a Puerto Rican-American child, and a Chinese-American child. And for the Mexican-American child, I traveled to Texas, to Brownsville, Texas, and made some contacts there.
I hope you went when the weather wasn't too hot. Brownsville is the hottest part
no,
in the United States.
I survived. And I did the three books. Unfortunately, the books are now out of print. But I loved doing them.
But weren't you also making a point there by writing books about minority children at a time when, if I remember correctly, there weren't too many books about minority children? Now much of that has changed.
Well, that's true, although that was not my major focus. You know, I didn't go into that with the thought, oh, I'm going to make a point about minority kids. I went into it thinking, well, I'm going to do this because I like to take pictures, exciting pictures, good pictures, and I think that these three books would make good stories illustrated with photographs.
So, Julia, I get the feeling that whether the author's intention originally was to make a political book or not, a book still winds up being perceived as political because it does something that the rest of the world sees.
Absolutely, and I mean, I think that that an author's what I liked about Joe's story was there was a real sympathy. There was an understanding of these children's lives. I liked that it was in the child's voice. And in the story Elizabeth that we included, there's a child in living in real urban poverty, expressing concerns about danger where she lives, but she's also talking about, you know, very simple pleasures in her life, and so she comes off as really human, and it's not propagandizing, and I think it's much more powerful because it's not.
And the real trick, I assume, I'm asking both Joe and Charlotte this, is finding a way to take complex ideas that you might normally address to adults and make them accessible to children, also make them entertaining.
So, well, in my case, I was grabbed by the idea of this kind of almost nursery rhyme of something leading to something leading to something, even more than I was grabbed by the
political. You mean there was a spider who swallowed a fly? There was an old
yeah,
lady that
like
swallowed.
That one.
But
yeah.
Didn't you say that the story was inspired? It was inspired by something you read in the New York Times,
right.
Of a real story of
a real little article, yeah,
of cats literally being parachuted onto the island.
Yeah. Well, not literally. That's more like Jose Arroyo's illustrations,
okay.
Which are charming and very funny.
Well, Julia, the oldest story in your anthology is from 1907, and that's Buster Brown Plays David and Goliath. Well, how did a boy who lived in a shoe with his dog Tig wind up becoming political?
Well, you know, that
I used to wear Buster Brown shoes.
That was a story that a librarian at Syracuse University Library showed to Phil Nell, my co-editor, and it's got a strong message about peace, and that was the reason that we included it. I thought you were going to point to the Socialist Primer, which has more.
Was that even earlier?
No, that's I guess it's right around the same time. I guess that's 1908.
But you suggested that there were books that were doing this sort of thing and dealing with politics before the 20th century.
Yeah.
So abolitionists were doing children's books, weren't they?
Yes, there was an abolitionist journal for children called The Slave's Friend. And Lydia Maria Child, and I've read there have been a few collections of abolitionist children's literature that have been put together. So
was it mostly in those kinds of instances movement groups that thought it would be a good idea to put out a book that would that would give the message to the kids, like the socialist primer?
Sure. I mean, it depends. You know, I think if you look at the history of radicalism, you know, whether it's socialists or communists or civil rights activists, they all had socialists had socialist Sunday schools. Civil rights activists had freedom schools. One of our stories was actually first published by SNCC, the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. Feminist movement had this Lollipop Power Press. Ms. Magazine had a Stories for Free Children section. So many of these were directly tied to the movements. In some cases, we knew just about the politics of a writer. We knew they were kind of associated with the communist movement or the socialist movement or feminist movement, and they weren't writing, you know, on behalf of any kind of an organization. They were just expressing their beliefs.
And who do you think should be looking at this book? Is this a book for adults to look at and think, oh, gee, this is the way children have been addressed over the years? Or
I mean,
do you think a kid would read this and suddenly join every radical movement there was in the 20th century?
I don't think a child would read it and suddenly join every radical movement. My 5-year-old, her favorite story is actually When the Day They Parachuted Cats on Borneo. But I think she just loves saying the title.
That's not enough.
But I think there are many stories that children would enjoy here. But I think we intended the book for adults, a kind of museum-going public, and we're hoping that many parents will be inspired, our teachers will be inspired to read some of these stories to kids.
My guests are Julia Mickenberg, one of the editors of a book called Tales for Little Rebels, a collection of radical children's literature. She and Philip Nell have edited the book. Also here are two people whose stories appear in the book, Charlotte Pomerantz and Joe Molnar. It's published by NYU Press. Julia, in your introduction, you talk about some faux radical children's literature, such as the Black Panther coloring book. That was actually created by the FBI?
Yes, that was created through the COINTEL program. And that was, the Black Panther coloring book was something that you can find around. And they created that to make it seem like the Black Panthers were distributing this really incendiary messages for very young children, and that was supposed to appall people and turn them against the Black Panthers. But in fact, it was not actually a Black Panther creation.
But does it illustrate a danger that we might find in some children's literature, that it can be manipulative?
Sure. I mean, I think even children's literature that doesn't seem political at all is arguably very political, because it's just saying that the way things are is the way they ought to be.
Well, also, as you mentioned earlier, if you say that there should be peace on earth, some people think that's perfectly fine. Others will see that as a political message.
Yeah, or anything about some, you know, messages about global warming. Some people don't believe that any discussion of global warming is propagandizing. We also included stories that are not really progressive at all, and that were representative of a real sectarian strand in the left.
There are still books that are being called radical today. In fact, a recent controversy was over And Tango Makes Three. That's not in this book.
We do have it in our supplemental reading list in the back of the book. That's a story about the penguins in Central Park Zoo, two gay male penguins that sort of adopted an egg and raised the pet the child penguin.
And people saw that as something that was promoting homosexual activity?
You know, I hadn't known about the
tolerance toward homosexuals among
children? Yeah, I hadn't known about the controversy.
Among penguins.
Among penguins, yeah. I mean, what I like about that story is, again, it's not dogmatic. It's not hitting you over the head, and it's a very playful, you know, story.
You say that during the McCarthy era, people actually could escape scrutiny by writing children's books.
And that was really the subject of my first book, which was on children's literature and the left during the Cold War, and how this became an avenue. I think it was seen as an area that, or it was overlooked. It was something that was never seen as important enough.
And Langston Hughes is one of the people who contributed to that.
Right. Right.
Well, if
group.
You take the fables of Aesop, a slave, they were definitely disguising strong points of view which couldn't be expressed otherwise.
I suspect that if we go through children's literature, the history of children's literature, whether it's Grimm's fairy tales or Aesop or whatever,
we're
going to find political themes, aren't we? But you also write in your foreword that some of the stories represent the darker side of the left social imagination. What do you mean by that?
Well, I mean, we included a number of stories that, you know, I think the most obvious example is the communist ABC we include, which has things like K is for Kremlin, where our Stalin lives. L is the lead he so ably gives. You know, this is one reason why we don't say this is for kids, because no kid is going to be able to read that without some explanation of this is about illusions. This is about something that a whole group of people believed and were wrong about.
Uncle Joe.
Uncle Joe, right.
Did you ever feel pressured, I asked both Joe and Charlotte, to depoliticize anything you wrote for children?
Well, I wrote a book called The Princess and the Admiral, which has been published in about 20 anthologies. And each time there were two phrases they wanted me to change in order to reprint it. One is something about, oh, I wish I could remember, but I want you to be, the princess says, I want you to be more fair to women, especially princesses. Mm-hmm. A couple of lines like that was interesting because everybody chose the same lines, which seemed to me pretty innocuous. But.
And Joe?
Well, I never felt any pressure to depoliticize the children's books. Some of my other photographs were of political events, you know, like the 1968 Democratic Convention in Chicago. I was there and I photographed that.
My guests will be reading from Tales for Little Rebels this Saturday at noon at Blue Stockings Books. That's at 172 Allen Street between Stanton and Rivington. The book, Tales for Little Rebels, a collection of radical children's literature edited by Julia L. Mickenberg and Philip Nell, published by NYU Press. Thank you all so much for being with us.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.